Okay, I'm very honored to be here with all you young folks and all you old folks and middle-aged folks. So I've been practicing Bhakti Yoga now for about 40-some-odd years. So I guess I'm an old folk. So what I'm going to try to do is explain Bhakti Yoga in a non-denominational way so everyone can understand. We have a series of very nice pictures that are like little cartoons to explain exactly this. What is our true identity and what is our most important occupation in life? Whoops, I think I did the wrong thing. Oh, yeah. So, the first...
Let's see. Let me go back to this. All right, here we go.
So, we're going to ask a question, and you can each think about this question. This is called an epistemological question. That's a big word. But basically, that word means the study of how you know what you know. Like, if you think about it, what do you really know, and where did you get that information from, and who do you believe, and who do you not believe? Like, if you think about it, a lot of things that you think you know were just taught to you by either your parents. Your parents are actually, I hate to tell you, they're not perfect in knowledge. Most people in this world are not perfect in knowledge. And even most theologians, that means people who teach religion, are not perfect in knowledge. So we find, let's go on to the next slide. We have four defects in this world, all of us, insofar as attaining knowledge. We make mistakes. Here you see someone who's gone down a one-way street in the wrong way. That's a big mistake, because you can usually hurt your car. You've been confused things, you're an illusion, you see a snake. Of course, here in Fiji, you don't have any snakes. But in other countries, you see a snake, and you think it's a rope, or you see a rope, and you think it's a snake. Or you have imperfect senses, or you cheat. I hope no one here cheats. Raise your hand if you cheat. Nobody's going to do that, because if you were cheating, you wouldn't raise your hand. Oh, he cheats, okay. So we have all these four basic, really bad propensities. And what this does, it keeps us from understanding perfect knowledge and keeps others from speaking perfect knowledge when they have those propensities. So how do we find out where perfect knowledge is? Now, we're not talking about relative knowledge. Relative knowledge is something taught, let's say, in a culture. Like in the Western culture, we shake our hands when we greet each other. And in India, you go like this, namaste. That's relative stuff. Or how you dress, like in Fiji, some people dress in a Zulu. I dress in this thing, whatever it's called. When I first started dressing in it, I thought it was a woman's dress, so I didn't want to dress in it. It's called a dhoti. It's a traditional dress in India. So these are all relative things. Or your hairstyle. Like I have very little hair. Some of you may have a lot of hair. Like that. Actually, many years ago, before I decided to take up the spiritual path, I had a lot of hair. I had hair like this and like this. That's relative. It's not absolute. You know, what your hair is like, where it grows, that's all relative stuff. So in the schools, generally you're learning relative knowledge. And even the scientists change their theories every few years. I studied science at the university. I was an engineer, electrical engineer. And now the theories I learned in the university are useless. They're not taught anymore. So if we want real knowledge, we have to go to the source of knowledge. And of course, even if we're talking about the source of knowledge, who is God in any tradition or every tradition, we have to have the right desire too. Because as stated in one of our books called the Bhagavad Gita, according to your desire, you get remembrance, forgetfulness, or knowledge. Matak's Vrittir Jnana Mohonam Chah. In other words, if you want bad knowledge or wrong knowledge or relative knowledge, that's what you'll get. If you want to cheat, you'll be cheated. But if you want the real thing, here we see the three things here. There's remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. There's some sort of yogi there with a lot of hair. And so the actual way to achieve perfect knowledge is coming from above. Usually our method of attaining knowledge is from below. We try to figure it out ourselves. In logic, that's called induction. Induction means you see a lot of things in this world and you come to a general conclusion. So that's very problematic. Like you see here, where the scientist says most of us are the opinion, that is a Big Bang. The Big Bang was supposed to be the origin of the universe. Of course, they don't explain what created the Big Bang. Like if you have a Big Bang, someone obviously put some dynamite there. So as far as the universe being a Big Bang in the beginning, who set it off? Who put the universal dynamite there? So they don't explain that. It's all speculation. Well, and then you see another scientist say, well, I'm working it out according to my own calculations. So it's all speculative. Whereas real knowledge descends. You see, God in every tradition teaches various prophets, various incarnations. We're talking about the Vedic tradition. And then it descends from above, and that's perfect knowledge because the only perfect person is G-O-D, God. And if anyone here thinks that they're perfect or thinks that they are God, they are not G-O-D, they're D-O-G. You understand? Anyone who says, if I say, I'm perfect, I'm God, then you're dog. That's dog. Not God. So this is a depiction of what we call the cyclic succession coming down from God from the spiritual world. We in the Krishna Consciousness Movement have a traceable historical, the cyclic succession. You see God, one of his many incarnations, coming down from great sages, passing the information down to the present day and age. And the last person you see in the bottom there is my teacher. His name is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He's a guru. Guru means teacher or someone very heavy with knowledge. Here's another depiction, that if you want knowledge, you have to approach a teacher who has that knowledge coming down into cyclic succession. And then not only do you approach him in a submissive way. You see the disciples or students rendering service. This is in the Vedic context where sometimes disciples will bathe the feet of the guru or teacher and they'll sit at a lower position because when you're sitting in a very respectful lower position than those who are teaching, you actually have a different mentality than when you're sitting in a higher position playing with your iPhone when you're going to class. Any of you ever do texting when you're in class? Yes, raise your hand if you ever texted on your phone during class. I do all the time. But that's not very respectful. And sometimes the phone goes off and the teacher gets very upset. So this is another depiction too, because this higher knowledge that comes from the higher source, who is God, is so perfect that it can be considered to be a law book. So someone who portrays themselves as a spiritualist must be able to quote from the law book in the same way that a lawyer, a counselor, should be able to quote from the law. When the lawyer goes before the judge, the lawyer can't just say, it's my opinion, Your Honor, can he? He has to say, it says in the law that this person, he committed this crime, he should get this punishment. He has to be able to cite the law. And that's, a spiritualist has to be able to do that. In any religion, it's like we saw this nice presentation from different religions. So if you're a Muslim, you should be able to quote the Quran. And if you're Jewish, you'd be able to quote the Old Testament, Christian, New Testament, and Sikh, Guru Granth Sahib. All these things are your authorized sources of knowledge coming down from the supreme source. But there's a problem. We have problems, even if we have good knowledge. There's a problem in getting, receiving, or practicing that good knowledge. Here's the first problem. This age in the Vedic literatures is called the age of Kali. It's an age of quarrel. You find people fighting with each other for no reason whatsoever. I mean, if you read the newspaper, you see what's happening in North Korea right now. You see what's happening in Syria right now. You hear see what's happening in Iran right now. All over the world, people are fighting. And not only all over the world, even in families. I'm sure you see husbands fighting against wives, children fighting against their siblings. All sorts of problems, because in this age, people are less fortunate, they're short-lived, less intelligent, and they fight for no reason whatsoever. So here's what's going on. And then politicians, you know, so many problems in this age. This makes it difficult for us to accept authority. Like, even the word authority is a bad word in English. If I say to someone that you should accept someone as your authority, they say, no. I accept my boss if he pays me a salary during the day, but he's not my authority. My teacher, my priest, my minister, they're not my authority. I'm my own authority. You've heard people say that. I'm my own authority. As far as religion, I'll figure things out for myself. That's called eclecticism. So this is one big problem. And as we see here, this is what's happening in the world. Atomic bombs, so many things going out, so many problems. It makes it very difficult to have a peaceful mind. And this is another problem described in the Vedic literatures. These are all big problems we have to face. The Vedic literatures say that there are three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And in goodness, you have a sense that you have knowledge, but you're proud of your knowledge, and you become attached to it. In passion, you just want to acquire more and more. In ignorance, you just want to get drunk, watch television, and play video games. And that's what you see here. And in ignorance, you become like that pig there. I'm not going to tell you what he's doing. But that picture was designed based on things that happened in India. Like in India, many places they don't have bathrooms or toilets. So they have fields. And so you have to hold the stick to hold the pig and keep the pig from attacking you. So this is the nature of this age. Another problem is that people are falling in love with animals now. Because we all have a need for love. I don't know if any of you have ever listened to this song from the Beatles. Anyone heard of the Beatles before? Is it, you gotta have someone to love, you need someone to love. So we have this loving propensity that's originally meant to be invested in God. So instead, we're invested in so many things that we can't love another person. Then we get a cat or a dog. Some people even get pet cockroaches to love, as you see down here. Ugh. But they're all the same. Because all of God's creatures are exactly the same. So whether you love a pet, a dog, a cockroach, or a snake, or a mongoose, you've got plenty of mongooses here, right? It's all the same. Another problem is, three things that impede our understanding are lust, anger, and greed. In the Gita, these are described as three pathways to hell. So you see here, lust, there's a man being very romantic. There's a boxer there, anger, and greed, and someone who wants a lot of money. And the guy is becoming completely disturbed, obsessed, and confused. So even if he has spiritual knowledge, he won't be able to attain it. Here's another problem. In the modern day and world, we go to supermarkets, and there's so many advertisements, not even the supermarkets, but all over. You driving the car. I was here in Fiji about 6 months ago. There was a billboard for Red Bull. You've heard of Red Bull before? It's an energy drink. It says, drink this and kick like a mule. So people now want to kick like mules, but we have these senses. The senses means like the tongue, and the eyes, and the ears, and the nose. And these senses are just going after all these things in this world that are attracting us, whether it's a billboard, or those of you from India know about Bollywood films, or Hollywood films, or so many things that divert our attention from the search for the absolute truth. So here we are in the supermarket of the world, and our senses are going wild, especially if you go on the computer. You can Google anything you want and see anything you want on the computer. And also, there's the dissatisfaction from getting things that we do want. As we say here, see here, there's two children getting things for Christmas, and they get just what they wanted, but then they get bored, and then they start fighting over each other's presents. So, and then there's another problem too. What you see here are the people in this world, greedy, envious, fighting, etc. And then you even have the yoga problem. You may say, what's the problem with yoga? Well, most of the people who study yoga are what we call impersonalists. They may say they believe in spirituality, but they don't believe in God. They just think it's all one, we're all God, God forbid, whatever. So that's another impediment in spiritual life. So what do we do about that? Here's another impediment, that we have four types of people who don't want to hear about spiritual life. People who are not cultured, people who are simply interested in making money, people who are simply interested in mundane education, as we see here. And there are four types of people who are inspired by spiritual life. And those people are ones who are looking for the truth. Those people who are just curious. Those people who are suffering in this world. And sometimes people who want money go to God or want the spiritual life. So, therefore, if we can overcome all these obstacles, we can find out what our real identity is. This is really important. Like, who are you? Not simply what is your name. I mean, that's easy enough to say. My name is Joe or Bill or Susie or something. That's not you. That's really not you. Or a man or a woman. These are not you. Or I'm Fijian or I'm Indian or I'm American or I'm Russian or I'm Spanish. That's not you. That's something else, and I'm going to describe what it is. And to understand, first of all, we have to understand our identity. We have to understand that everything comes from God. First thing is that all of us are connected with God. We're like God's children. That's taught in every religion. In Sanskrit, in the Quran, in Arabic, in Hebrew, it's taught exactly the same thing. That everyone and everything comes from God. And, first of all, God is in everyone's heart. Whether we're talking about a dog, or a boy, or a bird, or a tree, or even a spider, it's the same God in everyone's heart. These are important points to understand before we can understand what our identity is. So then we come to the point of identity. This is a very interesting picture. You see, there's a man depicted looking at himself in a mirror. Now, while he's looking at himself in a mirror, you see inside his head, there's a little camera, and there's some microchips, like in someone's computer. And the image from that is being transmitted to the heart region. And you see a man with a steering wheel in his hands looking at a computer monitor, and he's steering the body. So that is the soul. In other words, we are different from the body. The body is a machine. Just like you have a car, or you may want a car, and you are different from the car. You drive the car, and then when you get to your destination, you get out. So the body has what we call analogous parts that to a machine. Oh, here you actually see things that looks like a machine. But we have a circulatory system. The circulatory system is like the system in which liquids get circulated within the car. We have an energetic system within the body. We have a nervous system within the body. But it's simply a machine, and it's different than us. Now, how do we know it's different than us? Because you're changing bodies. All of you had little baby bodies at one time, right? I assume. You didn't come out full grown. You were, even before the baby bodies, you were a little zygote in your mother's womb. That means in the beginning. And then you grew more and more, and after 9 months you came out. And then you grew up more and more and more. But you're the same person, and the body's changed. If you have a picture of yourself when you were a little kid, it looks different. Completely different. Just like myself, you know, I'm getting older, unfortunately. And I looked in the mirror in my bathroom, and I said, why did they put this picture of the old man in the bathroom? And then I finally realized it was me. Because I'm changing, the body's changing, but I'm the same. I feel inside just the same as all of you young people. But outside, I don't look it. So what's the problem? The body's changing, the soul's the same. I'd like to do the same thing. I'd like to go back to the university. My mother even wants me to go to medical school now. And I'm 63 years old. I'd be the oldest doctor you can imagine. I'd have to specialize in old people's medicine. So this is us in the body. And next to us, did you see this little blue figure there? That's a depiction of God. He's watching you as you're driving your body, waiting for you to realize who you are. Because you're so much immersed in that video game. You're in the video game. Anyone here ever see this movie, Matrix?
Yes.
Yes. And so it was like a big video game. So you're like in this video game controlling everything, and you forget who you are. Nowadays, many people go into the internet cafes and they play video games, and they die because they forget to eat or sleep. Seriously. In China, especially this happens in China, people go in there and they keep playing, and you find a dead body after a few days behind the computer. They forget who they are. So here we are in that body playing our little video game. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm from Fiji, I'm from America. And then after a few years, of course, then we're gone. It's like, let me give you another example. It's like a bird in a cage. Imagine you have a bird in a cage, and you take care of the cage. What a nice cage, and the bird dies. Not so intelligent. So that's what we're doing right now. And so, this God in the heart, and ourselves in every heart, or individual soul in every heart, occurs in every species of life. Here you see two deer. There you see a man and a woman, and a puppy dog, and a female dog. Isn't that cute? And the same thing is happening. They're in the video game. I mean, nowadays people get on the internet, they get on Facebook, and they fall in love without actually seeing the person. Or the person puts a picture of someone very beautiful, but they look as ugly as a dog. That's true. Happens all the time on the internet. So the same thing is happening in real life. You know, we're putting this face forward, but this isn't us. And we're thinking, true love. Is it? I don't know if you have anyone like this in Fiji, dude. This is an American slide. About half of our young people in America look like this, so. What about New Zealand, too? New Zealand also, to a certain extent. So same thing's happening amongst the punkers. And so then we analyze, all right, we're not the body, but what is this body? According to the Vedas, the body is composed of subtle and gross elements. Gross elements means earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And I don't have time to describe what that is. And then subtle is the mind, the intelligence, and the ego, or false ego. And then apart from that, there's the spirit soul. And then this soul that's us is doing something called reincarnation. Reincarnation means to take the flesh or take the body again. So here you see, just like changing dresses, you see the ladies changing dresses, we are changing this outward dress again and again and again. So here's this little boy, he's growing up, getting older, dying, and then he becomes a girl in his next life. Interesting. And then he dies. So all you men who think you're better than the women, guess what? Your next life will be. So you can treat the women nicely, because if you don't, you're only going to be a lady who's mistreated. Better remember that. That'll be your next life. So that's called karma. Karma means you get what you deserve. If you are bad, then something bad will happen to you in the future. So this is actually occurring, reincarnation. In fact, I can prove reincarnation, apart from the fact that we're changing our bodies. I'm a trained hypnotherapist. I've been able to regress people to their past lives in which they've spoken languages which they never learned in this lifetime. In other words, they can speak French, Spanish, Hindi, which they never learned in this lifetime, just by remembering their past lives, and they can tell you things, and they can remember whom in this life they knew in their past life. It's very interesting. And so we used to do this quite often because of my hypnotherapy training. So this is karma. This is a brief description of karma. If one acquires a lot of things in this life, and bad karma, then when the Grim Reaper comes, Grim Reaper means death, then you can't take things with you. As it says in the Bible, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Or, referring to the pharaohs, which was in the previous presentation, if you get buried within the pyramid, they used to bury people with all their servants there, with all their gold, and guess what? They couldn't take it with them. They even buried them with a boat. Did you know that about the Egyptian pyramids? They would have a little boat there so all their servants could row it across the ocean of death and take everything with them. But they left it there, and the grave robbers took it later on. However, if one is spiritual in this life, you can take that with you. So here on the right-hand side, you see someone in our tradition chanting the names of God. Of course, that's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And you take it with you, and you're born in a family of similarly spiritually minded people. Otherwise, you don't know where you're going to be born in your next life. I mean, you could be born as a penguin in Antarctica. That's really cold. No more sunshine, no more beaches, no nothing. So you got to watch your karma. As you sow, you shall reap, like the Bible says. Here's another example that karma is also how we take our birth in our next life is dependent also on our desires. Like here is a man who's buying a car. So what determines what type of car he gets is his karma and his desire. Let's say I want a very nice car, but I have very little money. What happens? I get a very cheap car. But if I have a lot of money, I get a nice car. So that's karma working together with desire. I'll give you a practical example. Let's say I'm a very romantic person. I'm not. But let's say someone likes, he's very romantic. Anyway, it's like those of you from India, he's a Bollywood star, like Vivek Oberoi or something like that. Some of you ladies know him. So let's say, but then I have very bad karma. Guess what I get to be in my next life? Can we go and guess? No, pigeon! Because a pigeon can have perhaps 100 relationships in one day. Wouldn't that be nice? Nice to be a pigeon, isn't it? Or if you like to watch TV, you can become someone's dog in New Zealand or Australia, and the dog sits and watches TV all day long. So it determines your, depends on your karma, how your desire is expressed. And this is actually, this is a very interesting slide too. This depicts what the spiritual world is like. Because there's a spiritual world we're meant to go to. So you ask, what is the purpose of all this? The purpose is to realize this world is not a place for us. The real place for us is with God in the spiritual world. In whatever tradition you're a member of, that's our real place. And that world, or this world that we're experiencing now, is a reflection of the spiritual world. In this world, we have relationships, like you see here. There's friendship, there's parents and children. There's also fighting. You see in the lower right-hand side, a man and his wife, they're fighting. I'm sure you've seen that, in the rolling pin. And all these relationships are there in this world. But in the spiritual world, in the spiritual realm, there's all these relationships there too. But they're based on real love, affection, and happiness, and real knowledge. So you see the reflection is described sometimes in the Vedic literatures like a banyan tree reflected on water. And when you reflect a banyan tree on the water, you're standing on the bank of the lake or river. It appears to be upside down, with its branches down and its roots up. So then, now that we understand our real identity, we're spirit soul, we're meant to serve God, we're eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. I have to end now? How much time do I have? What? All right, I'll let push your time. He's pulling the hook on me already. So, once we understand that, what is our occupation? What is the supreme occupation? Because that's the question I asked at the beginning. The supreme occupation is, first of all, to transcend these layers of the material realm and to come to the service of God even while in this world. But we're required to have some restrictions when we're doing these things so we don't become confused, bewildered, or stopped in our spiritual progress. So there's four basic restrictions. In the Christian world, you have the Ten Commandments. Honor your mother and father, don't covet, don't commit adultery. So these are very similar restrictions in the Vedic literatures. No meat, fish, or eggs, because that's harming other living entities. I know that's a difficult one for some of you. But you'll be healthier if you follow that. No intoxication. This becomes controversial now in everything I'm talking. No illicit sex, sex life outside of marriage, and no gambling. Because then you'll stay in the transcendental mode, the mode of goodness, if you can avoid these things. I can give later on a whole explanation of these things if all of you have any questions. And also to worship God in one of his many incarnations and manifestations. God comes down at various times, sundries, times, and places. That's a quote from the Bible. And in many religions, God comes down. And to worship him, especially, the best worship is chanting his names. In every religion, that's very much prescribed. And when you do that, then your senses become controlled. Instead, as we depicted in the other one, in the supermarket, someone's senses were completely going wild. If one offers everything, does everything for God, then the senses become quiet and one becomes happy. That's the real peace formula. And offering everything you do to the Lord, and different activities one can do, like you see some of the devotees chanting in a few minutes, or personally meditating or distributing spiritual knowledge, like many of our members distribute spiritual books, and engage in every activity, whether driving a car, hearing about God, serving God, and even in your occupational duty. You can be a person engaged in the construction industry, fixing cars, agriculture. You can be a member of the police, the army, a teacher, any of those things. Being spiritually minded doesn't mean you have to dress like this. Believe me, don't be worried about it. You don't have to get rid of your hair. I mean, I was very attached to my hair. But you can be like, we have a doctor here, Dr. Rajesh, he's a doctor, he has plenty of hair, he even dyes it, it used to be gray. So he likes his hair, and he has it. And so there's no need. Sorry about that. So there's no need to give up anything, but whatever you do, whatever you offer, it can be done for God in your own religion. You don't need to change your religion. But specifically, you begin to taste something called a higher taste. Here you see on the top, a little girl bakes a mud pie, which doesn't taste so good. But at least she's trying to do something. And her mother makes a cherry pie or any type of pie that people like. And then you have a higher pleasure or a higher taste. The spiritual life gives you a higher pleasure, a higher taste in life. And you dance and you chant and you enjoy life. And I can tell you from my own experience, I enjoy life now more every year, more and more. And you understand that your relationship, your ultimate relationship, is with God in the spiritual world. So thank you very much. And if you want any further information, you can write down my email address. I'll be glad to correspond with anybody who wants information about this subject matter. Okay, so any questions or comments? Question. Feel free to ask any questions you want. I like questions. Even if they're humorous questions, it's all right. Questions? Yes, there's a question back there. You asked a very good question. Like, we've all experienced it when you go on the computer. When you go on the computer, you have all good intentions, but you get diverted into looking at things that don't accomplish anything. That's your question. So how to be more determined? One way to be more determined is to cultivate what we say is the mode of goodness, to do be good to people, to help people, to eat the proper foods. In our book called The Bhagavad Gita, it discusses foods in the mode of goodness and activities in the mode of goodness. And that helps you focus your mind. But if you have a goal, a long-term goal, especially a spiritual goal, it'll help you be focused. Like before you go on the computer, you think, why am I on this computer? What am I doing? Facebook is not necessarily bad. I have 5,000 friends on Facebook. And they won't let me think anymore. I have another 500 who want to become friends. So it's not bad if you use it for the right purpose. Anything can be used for spiritual purposes. Facebook, Twitter. I'm on Twitter every day, too. So technology is good when it's used for the right spiritual purpose. Any other questions? Yes. Yes, sir.
So, my question is, does the word God preset meaning? Like, is it a predefined meaning or anyone can name They are all meaning of God.
Well, according to the dictionary, God is the supreme controller. He's omniscient. He's omnipotent. I'll describe that. He's omniscient means he sees everything. He's all powerful. He's all good. And these are various qualities that are described or ascribed to God. Not that anybody can call themselves God unless they're all about him. In addition, he must be the most attractive person, the most intelligent person, the strongest person, the most famous person, the most renowned person. These are also important qualities. So it's not that anybody, if I called myself God, nobody would believe it. But God has certain attributes. Now, God is called by different names in different religions. Like in the Islamic tradition, he's called Allah. Also in the Judaic tradition, he's called Yahweh. And it's actually, the very strict Jewish people, they don't even say the name of God. The Lord, that's another name of God. And Christ is another name of God. So one can chant and glorify any bona fide name of God. Not that you chant anything, but any bona fide name of God can be chanted as a religious practice. Any other quick questions? Do we have?
What does chanting, how does chanting transform our consciousness?
Okay, that's a good question. The doctor, he's a doctor, he asked, how does chanting transform the consciousness? Well, spiritual sound vibration has the effect of being what it refers to. I'll explain what that means. Like if you say a name of God, let's say one name of God is Krishna, then it is exactly the same as the person to whom it refers. If you say some material sound, it is different from that which it refers. Let's say I say the word water. And some of you might be thirsty, having sat here for a long period of time. I can hear that. Some people are thirsty. So then why did you just chant water, water, water? Why do you have to drink water? Because the name water is different than the substance water. Like in Hindi, you say jal or pani. Pani, pani. Or in Sanskrit, not Sanskrit to say, it's pani. So in Spanish, you would say agua. Agua means water, but it doesn't do you any good. But spiritual sound has the ability to bring the object to you. So when you chant the name of God, literally God or Krishna is dancing on the tip of your tongue, and when you come in touch with the Supreme Pure, it purifies the consciousness, so you're able to perceive reality. Right now, all of us have blocks to our doors of perception. That's actually something stated by Huxley many years ago. In other words, we're wearing glasses, but the glasses are dirty. When the glasses are dirty, you can't see what's happening on the other side. But if you take the glasses and you clean them, then you can see very easily what is there. So our hearts are actually covered by illusion. What we described before is the three modes of nature. So by chanting, you eradicate or cleanse the heart so you're able to perceive who you actually are. Okay. So, any other questions? Oh, we have one other question. One more question. Who? Whose question? No other question? How do you understand your real identity? How do you understand what your real identity is and not your false identity? Well, it's like waking up in the morning. When you engage in spiritual practices, it's like when the sun comes up in the morning. When the sun first comes up, everything is real dark and you see a bunch of shadows. But after a while, you begin to see figures, but they're black and white. And after a while, you see colors, right? When the sun comes up. So when you engage in the process of spirituality, such as the chanting, which I mentioned before, in the beginning, things are a little dim, and then it gets brighter and brighter and brighter. And ultimately, you see your real self. And in the spiritual realm, you have a relationship with God. And what is that relationship? It could be a friendship relationship. You could be God's lover. You could be a parent or a servant or a passive worshiper of God. And you enjoy that way. Because we all have a loving propensity. What I mentioned earlier in the slides, we have this loving propensity. We want to love someone really in an unlimited way. But you try your best. I mean, let's say you get married or a boyfriend or girlfriend. You try your best, but then after a while, how many times can you say, I love you? It gets boring after a while. Believe me, it will. Because when boy and girl first meet, there's an adrenaline rush, and there's this thing you get called dopamine. This is getting a little scientific now. It's a neurotransmitter, right, doctor? And it makes you real giddy. Like, anyway, you start singing and acting in very funny ways. But after a while, you can ask anybody who's been married for 1 or 2 years. That magic rubs off, right? I'm not going to ask anything. Because you'll get in trouble with your wife. It rubs off. And then you're thinking, but I want to love. I want to love unlimitedly. Forever. Eternal love. And it doesn't work. And then you're thinking, well, maybe my dog will be the one. And that doesn't work. Maybe I'll get a cow. And some people even have pet scorpions. Can you imagine? Because they're looking for someone to love unlimitedly. But ultimately, if you focus that, like if you focus the light in the sky, it goes on unlimitedly. But if you focus the light on the ground, it'll just go on for a little distance. So we have this need to love in an unlimited fashion. And we can also love everybody. If you love God, you can love everybody too in an unlimited way because everyone is connected with God. So this is the real happiness that we're looking for. So thank you very much. So what happens now?